Welcome to the second Planning Commission meeting for higher education, the group that will be developing the strategic master plan for higher education in Connecticut. Thank all of you again for your willingness to serve. I will convene. We were waiting for Senator Bai, but I was just explaining that sometimes it's very hard for us during session to move from one place to another without getting stopped six times. So hopefully she'll join us. Why don't we go around the room and introduce ourselves again? And I also asked some of the people in the audience who are representing, if they would like to say who they're representing here, that would be great. I am Roberta Willis. I am the House Chair of the Higher Education Employment Advancement Committee.
I'm John Harnick from the Office of Legislative Management.
Greg Anderson from UConn, formerly known as the University of Connecticut. Thank you.
Teresa Madonna, formerly of Sacred Heart University.
Judy Goldfarb, Early Childhood.
Judy Resnick, CBIA.
Sharon Palmer, Commissioner of Labor.
Lindy Gold, Department of Economic and Community Development.
John Bennett, former of UConn, which is former of the University of Connecticut.
Lois Schneider, Management Consultant.
Braden Hosh, Board of Regents for Higher Education.
Judy Grimen, the Connecticut Conference of Independent Colleges.
Jason Jakubowski, Hospital for Special Care.
Thank you. Thank you all again for coming in. Was there, Kyle, did you want to introduce yourself? Anyway? And Malay, you want to introduce yourself? Sure. Okay, thank you. Joining us, would you, Commissioner, would you like to introduce yourself? Welcome. Thank you all for joining us here this afternoon. I have the pleasure of, as you know, at the last meeting we were, our charge was to elect a chair, and no hands went up. But shortly afterwards, John Schmick offered to be our temporary chair. So I am going to turn the gavel over to John.
Thank you very much. My understanding, at least in terms of the temporary chair, is that, in fact, it's temporary. So I've made it abundantly clear that my definition of temporary is through June 30. So the expectation is that someone will emerge from this group and perform the duties as permanent chair immediately thereafter, if not sooner. So that's the agreement that we're under, and I think I'd like to say that in terms of future meetings, we will start promptly at 3 o'clock. It's a little bit unusual for these legislative meetings, I think, but we will start promptly at 3, and we will conclude promptly at 4:30. Today, we'll spend some of our time talking about the RFP. And in terms of the goal and timeline of this committee, the conversation we had last week informs me that we should expect a preliminary report, hope to have a preliminary report from the consultant to be hired somewhere around January 2014. That's not far away. Is that correct?
That's preliminary, yes. That could just be John to say you're still working on it.
Right. So we'll keep that as a goal for the time being, but that means that there's a lot of work to do in the interim, which obviously includes getting that RFP out and hiring an appropriate consultant. So that's certainly important to all of us. Relative to available resources, I think we heard last at our last meeting that there is approximately $150,000 available to pay a consultant to do the work for us. There may be some additional dollars needed, maybe taken out of that $150,000 to pay for some speakers if you feel that it would be appropriate to bring some speakers to the table. In terms of the RFP process to hire the consultant, we do have a representative here from the Office of Legislative Management to tell us about that process. And if you'd like to go ahead and...
Yes, yeah, please go ahead, John.
Okay. I don't know, Representative Wallace, if you had an opportunity to send out the information that I had forwarded to you about a week or so ago in an email. But anyway, what it does is, if not, we can get that to everybody that will be involved. Yes. Oh, you
yeah,
do it have it. Okay.
I think everyone has
right.
it, hopefully.
Great.
It was addressed. It said Representative Willis and Senator Bayh
yes.
on the top.
Okay. Yes. Okay. And then there's an attachment to that that basically... What we had done was a few things. One is that we had looked at the information that you had sent us from the other states, and we kind of sanitized through that and then came back and decided, you know, these are some of the things that you could consider, whether you want to, what the parameters are you want for the consultants. So really at this point, what the Office of Legislative Management can do for you is once you've decided on what your goals and objectives will be, and then your evaluation criteria for the consultant to do the work, then we would like to meet with the chair and whomever else would be involved. And we can actually craft the RFP. There's a number of, obviously, as many of you know, there's a number of requirements the state of Connecticut has around that. But then we would go forward, we would do the advertising, posting it on the web, et cetera, et cetera. If there's any specific organizations that you would like us to send it to, we can also direct email it to them as well, excuse me. So we could do a number of those things for you. And then what we do is we then get the information back. We pre-qualify all of the proposers and then make sure that they have the necessary documentation and have the ability to do the work. And then we then forward on the proposals to the committee to evaluate all the proposals. We would establish a scoring sheet before that. Obviously, we typically what we like to do is see the members evaluated independently and then come together and then come to a consensus as to who would do the best job for the state of Connecticut. So, the biggest thing I think, as I mentioned at our previous meeting, was that we just don't want anybody to inadvertently disqualify somebody by contacting them prematurely at this point. So that's the number one thing. Beyond that, we are available here to assist you and to go forward.
So in terms of a list of prospective consultants, do we have such a list? I'm going to assume that there's probably a handful of those such consultants around the country that have done this work and would be appropriate to do the work for the state of Connecticut.
I would look to the committee if they can give me that information. We would definitely direct mail that. We do not have that.
We do not. Okay.
Thank you. I know there have been, and maybe I missed this in the first few minutes, but I know there have been a number of states that are sort of seen as models for their strategic plan over the past few years. Maybe there's a way that we could reach out to those states and ask about their process and get, am I repeating what's been said?
No.
But I think that would be a good next step, because and figure out which ones are model. I know there's some folks even maybe in the room who've been doing some work with Lumina who could help us as well. I don't know if other people here know how we might make sure that we track down the right people.
You may have seen some correspondence from Jamie Merziotis, who is the CEO of the Lumina Foundation, and he offered up several states, which in his opinion did a very good job of developing a similar strategic plan. So that's an easy place to start in terms of identifying potential consultants for the project. But I would invite all the members of the committee to offer up names of any consultants that you may be familiar with and feel would do a better than adequate job for the state. Is that fair?
I also want to mention in terms of resources that we will, today's not a good day for staff here because we're on deadlines for action by many of our committees, but we will have the Office of Legislative Research, who will have two staff people here that will assist this committee as well. Any requests for information or research that you would like this committee would like them to do would have to go through Senator By and myself. But that those resources are available to us. Once the session is over, then they clearly will have a lot of time to devote to this activity, in addition to hopefully having the consultants at that time.
So given that this is really, yes.
So can we just ask that one of those research folks would contact these eight states that were emailed to us and just find out what consultants were used and make sure that they automatically get on the list for dissemination?
Don.
John, a quick question. Do you, I don't know anything about the Lumina Foundation. I noticed that they're centered in Indiana. Does that mean that they have a bias toward the state of Indiana, where my PhD is from?
They actually have a bias towards Connecticut because Mr. Marisotis is from Connecticut.
Okay. Because one of the proposals was from Indiana, right?
He is considered... Yeah, he also started the Institute of Higher Education, which is a national policy think tank, and then he moved to the Lumina Foundation and is the founder of that and is a major funder of higher education initiatives throughout the United States.
Okay.
I don't know, Brandon, do you want to ask thing to that?
There are obviously a number of different organizations. NGEMS is in there. I think there's just a broad list of these that we can pull together. IHEP. There's several.
Actually, you would be a good source of knowing. Now that I think of that, we don't have to ask the Office of Legislative Research. Yes, Senator Boucher.
Thank you very much. I do know something of the Lumina Foundation. For many years, they're nationally known, highly regarded, and have spent a great deal of time in the area of higher education funding and costs associated with education as a way to help the educational systems generally nationwide to make analysis and be helpful without prejudice about a particular opinion one way or the other. So I do believe that they do have a real depth of expertise. They're very highly respected and, as I said, well-known throughout the country and not just where they seem to be headquartered. But this has been their area of expertise, so I think we would be well-served to make use of some of their resources.
I would second that comment in the sense that I don't know any people at Lumina Foundation per se, but in the readings that you do, if you follow higher education in the social media, Lumina Foundation always comes out with being very well respected and not that it should apply to everything, but certainly I like very much the stands or the comments that they provide, so they would be a real good source.
This will give me an opportunity to plug an Alliance event that's coming up next Monday. So if you're interested in becoming more familiar with Lumina and their work, if you look in your packet, you'll see this flyer advertising that Haley Glover, who's the Director of Convening Strategy from the Lumina Foundation, will be front and center at our Rising Star Breakfast. We've got a great panel of corporate HR folks that will be addressing Haley's comments in the second half of this. So I would encourage you to register, and you can do that online. And we expect a robust conversation with Haley and the panel. Given that this is really the first meeting outside of the organizational meeting last month, it may be a good opportunity to discuss the goal of this group and to make sure that everyone is clear and that we're on the same page. I don't think we spent much of any time doing that at the last meeting. So if you could just bear with me for a moment, and I would like to read the charge of this group. And this group is required to establish numerical goals for 2015 and 2020 that, one, eliminate the post-secondary achievement gap between minority students and the general student population, and, two, increase the number of people who, A, earn a bachelor's degree, associate degree, or certificate, B, complete coursework at community colleges, and C, enter the state's labor force. The plan must also provide specific strategies for meeting these goals and consider the impact of education trends on higher education in Connecticut. So I think the first question I might ask would be relative to establishing numerical goals for 2015 and 20. So given that it's April 2013, does it really make any sense to be looking at 2015? By the time this plan is crafted, completed, and at least beginning to be implemented, we'll be well on our way to 2015. So do we have latitude to change that to, I assume we do, but I better ask the question, to 2020, 2025, or is that going to be awkward somehow?
I guess that gets referred to the legislators. No, it's not. There is obviously a need to change the dates because they are already out of sync, since this has taken a little bit longer to initiate than anticipated. So, yes, we do need to change the dates. And, in fact, if anyone has issues with the statute as it exists now, this would be a good time before session ends for us to make technical changes to the statute regarding the strategic master plan for higher education in Connecticut. One issue we'll get to later on in the agenda, and that's makeup of the board. That is an issue we really yep. discuss.
So while we have promised ourselves to deliver some report, have something of substance to say by January of 2014, then in terms of the delivery of the final report, what date do we have established for that?
Well, I think the first, if I remember correctly, the first one was 15, which, well, the initial one was preliminary due on the 2012, so not later than October 1st, it says 2014, shall submit a report, and obviously that is way out of whack. So we're going to have to at least move it to 15. Yeah, for the first report. So moving it, is that your pleasure? Or would you like it later?
How about earlier?
Early. Okay.
Yeah.
It's up. What does this group feel?
So how long would we expect this consultancy to last? 12 months at the most? I mean, I can't imagine that we'd want a consultant on board for more than 12 months. Commissioner?
I was just going to add that, our higher education system did embark during the course of 2012 on a strategic plan. So I think with a little bit of help from a consultant, and I think that might be useful information to get us launched. And one other thing I would, and it's not really clear in the legislation, but because I sit where I sit,
I'm very interested to make sure that this work that we do really focuses on the needs of our workforce going forward and aligns our higher education in a very strategic way with what the expected workforce needs are going to be in the next 5 to 10 years.
I believe the strategic plans that are done on higher education really are institution-based. They are not higher education across all institutions. And if they are, they have never shared their report.
They probably haven't shared their report. That was one of my questions, is what is the gist of what we're trying to cover? So this is the new higher ed CONSCU. Is done this strategic plan. So it has community colleges and Eastern, Southern, Western, all that jazz. But are we trying to reach beyond that and coordinate with UConn, with independent universities? I mean, I think there's some merit in that, but also when the scope gets too large, it could become unmanageable. So that's a question from my point
of view. The legislation specifies across all institutions, private and public institutions, because we're developing a plan for higher education, and are we going to meet the employment goals? And you clearly couldn't do that without incorporating the independent colleges. Judy, do you want to speak to that? Okay.
Senator Boucher?
I think it would be helpful if, right off the bat, even though it's very specific on what the goals are, that both for the committee and for consultants, that there's a real clear mission statement that's very clear, and then under that mission statement, some very clear goals. And I think in that regard, it would direct the effort more clearly and probably get the most out of the results you want from the consultant as well. So I would suggest maybe that might be the first order of business.
I think the statute, Senator Boucher, really outlines what the goals are. It's rather extensive. It is very detailed, and not only does it identify who we want represented on the board, but it also sets some very important goals that we've talked about over the years on the Higher Education Committee. Again, if people feel it is lacking presently, then they should speak now before June 5th. In order for us to change that. But the goals are very specific and address workforce development and pathways between high schools and colleges, and it also addresses any kind of post-secondary education. So we're not just looking at higher education, though we keep referring to that, but it does mean post-secondary education.
There was two documents that we were given about the legislation. One was a link to the legislation in the first letter that we got from you, and then another one was in the packets the last time we met. They're somewhat different, so I'm not exactly sure which one we're supposed to be going off of, and there's some contradiction. Okay.
I think there were two. There were an earlier version when it didn't get implemented, and then the legislation was changed. Dates had to be changed, and some changes were made in language. You know, it's like anything. When you go back and look at it, all of a sudden you're realizing you left something out. So that's what happened in the second version. But basically, it's pretty similar.
Thank you, John. I just want to follow up on Commissioner Smith's comments, because she brings up a really good point, and I'm wondering the place here, and the other people here probably have more experience than I in strategic planning, period, but it seems to me that each of our institutions, when I visited most of them, they all hand me a document that is their strategic plan. So out there are strategic plans for each institution. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing something bigger and broader, and I'm sure, Judy, all the privates have a strategic plan. We're doing something, you know, at a statewide level, but it seems to me that we might glean a lot from all the work those institutions have done, mm-hmm. because I'm sure they've gone out and looked at workforce needs and looked at higher ed trends and you know, we are so lucky in this state with all the institutions that we have, the vast majority of which are really well-run institutions. So I just throw that out there as something we should consider. And then as a second point, I know that both our Department of Labor with Commissioner Palmer and our Department of Economic and Communities Development with Commissioner Smith are looking at jobs for the future and probably could give us maybe slightly different pictures, but important pictures of what's next as important groundwork for this committee. So I don't know how we put those two pieces together, but I think they'll match up some and then inform us how we can take all those pieces and make a big picture plan. So I just sort of throw that out there. I think it was a good observation.
It might be useful also to ask each of the schools from which there is a strategic plan whether they utilized a consultant and who that was, so that we might draw some inferences from the similarities, number one, good, bad, or indifferent. But if those are awfully good, it may save a lot of time and money to consider using that consultant.
I trust that everyone has seen this, probably via email. Okay. It's a document by the National Conference of State Legislatures entitled Transforming Higher Education, National Imperative State Responsibility. And our own Denise Merrill, who was at our last meeting, was one of the co-chairs of this. And the document's a bit dated. It goes back to 2006, but it's probably as relevant today as it was 7 years ago. But just to speak to that issue of institutional strategic plans, on page 5 of that document, there's let me just read this short paragraph here. It's about defining clear state goals. It says, effective higher education policy balances state interests with institutional interests. It is the job of legislators to articulate and support the state's interests. Legislators cannot and should not try to define institutional interests. Rather, clear state goals allow institutions to determine how their interests are served by achieving state goals. So hopefully that does bring... If you all agree with that, then it brings some clarity to that issue. Senator Bayh.
You know, I think I'm so glad you just read that, because what we struggle with in this building is everybody, it's sort of like we need to fix the ECS formula, but everyone wants their particular town schools to get the most funding. And I think this is the missing piece, where Representative Willis is so right about why we need a statewide strategic plan, because absent a strategic plan, it's every institution for themselves, and it's every state legislator for every institution that's in their district. So reading that really brings, at least just so you have a legislator's point of view, that really brings that to the fore, that it will help us see the big picture versus hear about, you know, I have 2-3 in my district right now. So we look out for those, because that's who we're talking to. But a big plan will be great. Thank you.
I'd like to return to the issue of public and private institutions in the state of Connecticut and what type of influence or control the strategic plan might have over both. It seems pretty clear to me, and I'm sure to you as well, how that would impact or influence state institutions. It's not quite as clear to me as how that might impact private institutions. So, Judy, I'd love to have you weigh in on that question.
Sure. I mean, I think that there are all kinds of ways, and if you look at other states and some of the things that even Connecticut has done in the past, there are logical ways that a state strategic plan, so, for example, a state strategic plan that says, for example, we have significant numbers of engineering or bioscience employers and need those kinds of degrees, and so your private in this state in those two academic areas, the private colleges actually have a large share of that. And so are there ways that we can work in concert? Are there ways that, you know, we can make sure that this, I mean, in fact, the institutions from a research perspective, public and private, already work together. There may be ways that undergraduate to graduate can work together, where Fairfield's doing some undergraduate and flowing them directly into UConn's graduate. And I mean, there are all kinds of things like that. You know, in the way distant past when the state needed, I think it was nurses, there was actually a contract with private colleges because there was such a great need. So, I mean, there are a range of different ways to do it. And I think that the other piece is that because we're sort of a big sector here, we have those connections with employers as well. And so it's useful to bring that to the table.
I was just thinking of it as an example on the STEM initiative at UConn, that's a collaborative with Yale, Wesleyan, and UConn. So here you have, they're applying for grants together, they're working together, so that's a perfect example of an initiative that obviously has a job component, research component, stimulating Connecticut's economy. So it brings it all together. So thank you, Judy.
If I could just add, I mean, there's an example at, actually the University of Hartford has it's an Air Force contract. They're using a range of Connecticut companies to work on this research project. The University of Hartford has a piece of it. University of Bridgeport has a piece of it. University of Connecticut has a piece of it. So they essentially said, what's the project that the Air Force needs? It's a research. And then how do we best meet that within the state? So it's public, it's private, it's private employers, it's higher education. And the stem cell is sort of a similar model. I think there are a number of those.
Thank you for those comments. It brought a question to mind, and that is, how much of this strategic plan is going to focus on the needs of the employers and also demographic trends as well? Because if this is a long-range plan, you're not just wanting to meet the current demand, but future demand, and how it aligns with what is being sought at the moment. Like you said, there was a nursing shortage that may have been filled. Going forward, would it be in robotics or nanotechnology or 3D printers or something that some of our companies are starting to look at, and that dialogue with them about where do they see their companies going and moving towards themselves in order to be able to compete? So I really think that this plan has to be very closely connected with the employment, the sector that Connecticut is either growing in or wants to grow in, and how the schools are able to produce that employee. For example, the disconnect, if you were in Nebraska and you were looking at marine biology and jobs on the coastline and needs for the maritime arena may not be quite as popular as some in agriculture and other things that more in line with what the state is strong in and potentially will be strong in.
Commissioners Palmer or Smith? Commissioner Palmer?
Let me just respond to that a little bit. The Department of Labor does that work in job projections and career projections in their research department, and we would be able to tell you where the hot jobs, so to speak, are. And in fact, economists from around Connecticut will be meeting over the next week to design the newest platform for both economic projections and employment projections for the next 10 years. And they do that on a regular basis. They don't always agree, but they come to consensus over what that foundation will be for building the next set of projections. So that's done on a regular basis. We convene it, and it's available to anyone who wants that information. So that will be very helpful to informing programmatic needs.
I might just add that the Connecticut Department of Economic and Community Development, under the governor's leadership, has developed a strategic plan, and there are sectors of the economy there that we're very focused on. And while they may not be necessarily large today in some respects, we believe they are the sweet spots of future growth. So I think cross-roughing these two documents would give us a good feel for the kinds of skill sets that we're going to need in the future. I will add that, you know, my own understanding of this from a distance so far, but fact-based, is that technology skills, all the STEM work we're doing, that we're talking about at UConn, and that Stephen Pryor is trying to do through K-12 and other parts of our economy, that is all going to be essential for virtually all of the kinds of jobs we're looking at. So, but I think even more specificity to help the universities plan and understand where we're trying to go would be, I think, useful part of this. So I fully endorse that. And by the way, I think asking employers, again, is a good idea. And I see some nodding over there from CBIA. So.
I would be remiss if I didn't agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I think we've always been very proud of the work that our Department of Labor and DECD has done. But it never ceases to faze me as we talk to employers when asking questions slightly differently in person. Sometimes we get and glean additional information that's very helpful. And I think that's what I would look to a consultant to help us do, is really to help. Short of a crystal ball, I think we do need to ask them directly as well, too. But I think it's the combination of all of this information that really is where the power of this report could lie.
John?
Yeah, we all hear the stories about how the jobs of 5 years from now haven't even been identified yet and all the rest of it. And all we have to do is look back 5 years to what they would have said about today to know that that's undoubtedly true, and it's only going to get more accelerated. So it seems to me that one of the ideas that we have to have in this strategic plan is some sort of an expectation of continued dialogue among the various agencies, among the employers, among the universities, and also cross discussions with the legislature and industry with the employers, et cetera. And if we're going to be efficient with our use of money in this state, and if we're going to make a difference, that's what we're going to have to do, I think. Then we have to stop competing and start finding a way to get people talking with each other and do what's best for the state, not what's best for the Mechanical Engineering Department at UConn or whatever it is.
I agree that we certainly need to continue sort of an ongoing industry higher ed conversation, and I think that there's a lot of that that goes on in an institutional, you know, individual departments. I think that there's some that goes on across certain disciplines where there's really a tight connection. Engineering is probably one of them. The suggestion that I have is that I think that it will probably take a little bit of time to get a consultant up and running, and perhaps before that happens, there are sort of three things that occur to me that we might as a group look at. One of them is to have the DECD and Department of Labor and CBA, you know, I mean, have you guys do a presentation on what your projections are today. Another one is, I mean, there's a whole range of data on demographics of the New England region, and particularly of Connecticut. I mean, I've got a presentation I do for our presidents. You know, it's useful in terms of who's the student of tomorrow. And the third would be on, I know we've all read every single one of the state plans that we were sent and memorized them all, but there could be a presentation where, you know, even if three people here say, I'll take a plan or two, where we just sort of highlight what are some of the key things that were done in some of those states, because in the past I'd seen some of them, and there's some very good things in there. So just a 2 cents.
Just want to follow up on that. So that much of this bill was stolen from other states. that I looked at
a lot of those plans, and many of the ideas in this really came forward, you know, right out of their plans. So plagiarism is a compliment. But they're one of the things, that, for those of you who weren't at the first meeting, that and didn't hear Denise Merrill, because the genesis of this came out of 2007, her efforts on a national level to create, see states implement a strategic plan. But one of the things I noticed, and I'm sure Braden, who travels around the country and meets, the states that have really moved ahead, on higher education, the ones that are that I hear in terms of best practices and making headway and change, are the states that had a strategic plan and did a really good job with them, and they're following it. And I want that for us. You know, I want us to have, you know, we can't stand still because everybody is passing us by. And Connecticut has always excelled in being able to produce an educated workforce. And that's what makes us unique, is being able to do that. And I think some of you may have heard the New England Board of Higher Education that made a presentation to the Higher Education Committee, where it showed that statistically, Connecticut citizens really benefit more than other states from higher education. The economic payback is much greater in our state. Anyway, what to lead into that, one of the things, the resources that I use is NCHAMPS. And in, I had this put in your packet because these two sheets, these two charts, that really show where Connecticut needs to be or should be in terms of college attainment. And Connecticut is part of complete College America. But this program, and maybe Braden can talk to at some meeting about that, really shows where Connecticut needs to be. And in fact, it's an interactive website. And you can look at other states, and you can click on where it says we want our college attainment to be 60%, and that's how it's set. But this strategic planning board can make a decision that they're going to change. You want to change that number. But it shows you if we continue on the course we're on now, we're going to be so far behind where we need to be. We're talking about an additional 115,000 people with degrees if we're going to be lacking if Connecticut doesn't get its act together. So what we do here, I think, is so critically important to the future of Connecticut. And there may be a lot of other strategic plans out here, but this one's going to be the best. Thank you.
I would like to second Judy's proposal. I'm returning to more practical things now, how will the work of the commission is going to continue. I think before we review and have a handle on data that different agencies and departments can provide for us, it would be difficult to go ahead, and so I wholeheartedly second Judy's proposal, and we should do that as soon as possible. My other question, well, related question, is the role of the consultant. We're talking about hiring a consultant and so on. To what extent do we really think that our work or the work of the commission is going to hinge on the work of the consultant? I mean, several of us, if not everyone in this room, have resources of our own. I hate to think that we're going to depend on a consultant when he's hired, he or she hired, and what kind of information we're going to get from the consultant. I think we should kind of go ahead getting a handle on facts first in the state. I mean, I know Connecticut was number one in terms of bachelor degrees 20 years ago, and now we're five or six. It's not so good with Norway ahead of us. So that's the point. We have to start somewhere, and hearing from the different departments is exactly what we should be doing.
I thank you for those comments. I totally agree. I had one thing to add because I think Judy hit the main pieces. And just as someone new to higher ed, you know, I'm a toddler teacher who's now chair of the Higher Education Committee. But toddler teacher is a very good background for my job most of the time. So the thing that struck me when I became chair of higher ed was what I'll refer to, it's not a term of art, but leakage. There is so much leakage in the system in Connecticut right now. We have everybody wants to come to college and succeed, but there's a whole bunch showing up unprepared who never even make it past the first class. So point one is unprepared. The second part to me are the huge number of students who drop out. So then we have some who make it through some classes, but for numerous reasons don't finish. And then the third part of that, then you have some that finish, but their college is offering majors where there's no jobs. So like this week I met someone at a party who said to me, I'm chair of this department of community colleges. We started X program, and it was great for 2 years. Now none of our graduates can get any jobs. And another college just around the corner is opening one of these programs. Applied, is going to get approved, and now they're 10 years ago there were two of these programs. Now there are five, and no one can get a job. And so I think the leakage factor on the unprepared, the dropout, and the majors without jobs, I don't know who's the right person, but I think Judy has it right with what are the jobs of the future, what are the demographics. But in Connecticut, I see one of our biggest issues is we get all these kids to the starting line, and it would make your hair stand on end if you knew how many, sort of, as I've referred to it, leaked out. If we can make our system more efficient, close some of those leaks, we'd be back to number one in bachelor's in no time, because we have a state where it is in our culture and in the culture of our schools and many of our families that you're going to college. But then there's this leaky ship that we have. So my question is sort of, it's maybe for the committee, is who's the best person to talk to us about the leaking? And maybe I put too many things in one thing, but I think that's another thing. Very early, that's what shocked me the most. So who can shock you guys with this so that we see that as part of our charge, and how do we as a state take that on?
So, you know, I sit on the boards of the technical schools, and we've just looked at a whole analysis of what happens to graduates there. And they can share that information, I'm sure, with this committee. And again, that's attached to the education department. Then if you go to the higher ed, they are looking at readiness for students entering the community colleges and the state colleges or state university system and trying to work downstream. So they may have some good data. In other words, they're working downstream to the high schools of where are we under-equipped and what can we do. And those are so I think we should ask, you know, as we're asking for the strategic plans, perhaps we ask as well for some of the gaps that they see. I mean, you've named one, but my guess is there are others as well about whether or not our students are really equipped as they go up the next level in education to face the, you know, the challenges that they get. And then I also think there's another issue about this disconnect between what programs we're offering and what maybe even are being asked for by students and their parents and what we're actually seeing the need growing for in the marketplace. So I think that's, I don't know quite how we get our arms around that one, but it is worth spending time on and something, trying to figure out some ways we can get students as well as their counselors, their teachers, and their parents to recognize that the world has shifted and IT is really big and manufacturing is no longer a dirty word and all those good things.
Just going to say Sharon has a report that she did, her Department of Labor, which was excellent. Maybe in our next meeting when we bring the agencies together to present, that's the kind of presentation I think people need to see.
I'd be happy to do that. I think as a committee we need to define how far back we want to go, though, on this trail. It begins with early childhood education. And if the child can't read by the time they finish third grade, then there's another trouble spot. If they can't do the math by fourth, maybe fifth, they're in another trouble spot. And it just compounds. So there are lots of leaks. We have to decide where we want to begin. I would suggest perhaps one of the biggest ones is around the 8th, 9th, 10th grade area where the major dropouts occur and children lose interest in school. That's a good place to begin.
Was your question related to this discussion or other or not?
Yes, we can look at that. And I might add that we mentioned the discussion about technology. We revise the projections every 2 years. It's a 10-year forecast, but it's a rolling forecast. If you look 10 years ago and then look now, it would be way off. But if you revise it every 2 years, as we do for those are things that occur in the job market, it's much more accurate. Not that you're going to pick up everything, because some of the things have moved so quickly that you just can't get there. But we can present at the next meeting if folks are interested in that. I'd be happy to.
I think, by the way, DOL and DCD has very good data and good people to support the generation and the manipulation of that data. But in terms of employment occupation projections, I mean, it's a little science and it's a little art, honestly. And I had a conversation with we had a conference call with this panel for the Rising Star Breakfast next Monday, and there were four senior HR managers, let's see, from Travelers, the Hartford Hospital. So when I asked them the question, well, how far out do you project employment needs? 5 years was probably tops. I mean, people winced at anything beyond 5 years. They don't, that's it. So, you know, but to try to get beyond that is fairly difficult, but certainly better than nothing. I mean, and I think when you try to hone down into very specific occupations and skills, you know, the one you can probably always point to is actuaries, because nobody wants to be an actuary. It's hard. So, you know, there's a limited number of those types of occupations, I think, that you can point to and say, we need X number of those, we need them in a hurry, we're going to need X by so many years. And one of the reasons I asked the panel that question is because when you look at the title of the Rising Star Breakfast, it says Connecticut 2025, the looming talent shortage. Well, that's a mere decade away. So it would be very difficult, frankly, for our corporate folks to speak to 2025, because they won't. Yes, Senator.
On that point, you know, that's why demographics are so incredibly powerful. It's aging a population and numbers of populations and births per population. There's a international trend now that the developed countries are shrinking to some degree, but yet the United States is actually in better shape than places like Italy and places like even China, from what I understand, and speaking with and attending a few of these meetings where internationally known demographers are talking about these now for the business sector. they're trying to plan in the business sector of what products and services, what the level of consumerism, what's going to happen to the investment markets, and where should they be moving with that, based on where do you invest? So where does the state invest its educational resources may follow the same pattern, is what's happening to the demographics of our state and to its business sector as well, and where they're going with that. And I think that that's used more for the really long-term projections, like you said. How could they get their hands around the fact of what's going to happen? And what I was looking at this morning, in fact, some statistics about, can you believe this, 2030 and 2050. And I was trying to get my hands around the fact that someone could actually project far enough to know that, with population trends and what that's going to do to the consumer and to GDP of a particular country and where they're headed, and whereas Japan is truly in a crisis situation. But the good news is that the U.S. isn't so bad, and they looked pretty good. So when we start to get depressed, there was some very comforting numbers in the fact that we do have more of an influx and we do have some population growth, and why immigration is important to our country, and how does that impact our educational institutions in Connecticut. There's no question that the demographics of the state have changed just in the last 10 or 12 years since I've been serving here, where we had a richer population with an average income coming in at $76,000 a year. Now we have a population coming into the state that's making $44,000 a year. How does that impact the cost of higher ed, how they can afford it, what is doing to our educational system as well? So we have to be realistic about what's changing demographically in our state and how do we best serve them as well. I'm sorry to go on about that, but it hit me this morning as I was poring over some demographic statistics on that, and it just seemed to fit this discussion.
Yes, that's an excellent point. And if you come to the breakfast next Monday, you will hear our representative from the Lumina Foundation give, she's going to provide you with some discomfort relative to data, and probably the most disconcerting bit of data you will hear from her as a little bit of a preview is when you compare the United States to all other countries in the world, and you look at the percentage of labor force, all ages, okay, and you look at the percentage of college grads, we're still number one. If you go down to the age cohort, 22 to 34, something like that, okay, we're like number 14. And that ought to scare you. And so she'll tell you that, and she's going to tell you a lot more. John.
I just wanted to add, when we were talking about leakage, I love the term. It reminded me of a course that I typically teach, first year course for any major, and it's titled "Getting the Most Out of Your College Time," and it always happens after the first set of exams without any lead in from me or any reminder from me. I always end up in a discussion in the class about why the grades aren't where they wanted to be, and as I said, the students bring this up, and eventually it gets around to the fact that somebody, one of them, will make the statement, you know, I don't think I belong in college, maybe, and this is after they've been told that University of Connecticut does its best to make sure that it doesn't admit anybody who can't finish if you make your effort. And what it really comes down to is they're not sure what they want to do in college or what college is all about for them. And so the end result is they're not that motivated to work on anything. And I always ask the question, and it's purely raise your hand, and so it's not anything more than anecdotal, except the fact that it happens year after year after year. One third to one half of the students tell the rest of them in the class, and me, of course, that they never made a conscious decision to go to college. It was just assumed, well, of course, we're going to college. And the end result is they haven't thought about where they want to go, what they want to do, where's the best place for them to go, and the whole series of questions. And I mean, that's got to be part of the leakage problem for sure.
Thanks. Let me just jump ahead, if I may, on the agenda to speakers. So it sounds like we've already answered that question. You would like to be informed over the next, at least the next few meetings, and have some speakers. Could Commissioner Palmer and Smith join forces and ensure that we have a presentation soon?
From our own agencies or from farther and beyond? Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do it whenever this group meets again.
So perhaps folks give input into what their expectations are so that we're prepared for whatever it is you're interested in learning about, because we've had sort of a broad-based discussion here today.
If you could provide me with any input over the next week so I can get that to our commissioners, I'd be glad to do that. I don't know if you have my... Does everyone have everyone's email here?
Yes, we do.
Okay. In terms of other speakers, I'm not sure how many meetings you'd like to have speakers. I don't know if you've heard Orlando Rodriguez before. In terms of demographics, and I absolutely agree that a discussion about demographics would be very useful for this group. So I might recommend Orlando or someone else, but he is someone I've heard, and he's very articulate. I think would do good. If anyone has any other better suggestions, please let me know before we go ahead and contact he or someone else. Would there be any interest in bringing in someone from another state that has gone through this process and that has done it well to report out on their results and how well they've done with implementation? Any interest in bringing in someone to do that?
I think it's a great idea, especially if we find a state that actually has seen success,
yeah,
as opposed to just people who are just starting along in this track.
Okay. Lindy?
What's concerning to me is what our colleague from legislative management said when we were talking about when he was talking about the process for a consultant. And it's more than likely that we would want to invite the consultant that we considered had the greatest successes and the best metrics. And would that preclude our considering that consultant for a state contract?
I can't give a yes or a no, but I would say yes, we'd be on the fringe for sure, because anybody that would participate in helping us craft our goals and objectives then has a competitive advantage, and that's the one thing we need to guard against. So that is an excellent point.
In terms of demographics, the other person whose name is now gone, but I can tell you where he's from, is from Northeastern. And he's the guru of demographics in New England. He's terrific. From Northeastern University, and I just heard him 2 weeks ago up in Cambridge, and I'm just blanking on his name. I'll get you his name. He's really done the labor force, the demography of the states in a way, and a very compelling. And I would imagine he wouldn't be on our list of our consultants for strategic plans per se.
Just to pursue that issue about bringing in a consultant that might prejudice this committee relative to the ultimate hiring, and it's a very good point. So if we brought in a representative of that state and not the consultant, which is what I did have in mind, how helpful would that be in averting that crisis?
Well, what we do typically is we do contact states. Right now we're working on a different RFP, and what we're doing is we're not contacting the company, we're contacting the references from the company and that we're considering. So we're actually talking to state employees, so that there's really not a conflict there. And we're just getting information back. I think when we work directly with the consultant or the firm is where we would get into an ethical issue.
So let me propose this. If we identified what we thought to be the one of the best or the best, the state that's done it the best, and we asked the chair of that committee to come and present before the group, would that work, do you think? Yes, Gregory.
And what I understand you to be saying is, or my interpretation of it is, that what we might like is someone from another state not to tell us what we are going to write, what our ultimate product is going to look like, but what the pitfalls and problems of the process that they use to come up with their program, because we now have a number that we can look at, so we can get some ideas of end products, but we would like to not repeat the mistakes that other states have encountered in coming up with their products. So if we have somebody, as you suggested, who's been through it, who could tell us, do this, don't do that. If you're going to get a consultant, think about this when you're looking at consultants.
Yes.
Your final product should be this. It's going to really take you 2 years, so in fact your timeline
yes.
has to be...
That would very much be part of the discussion. Of course, they could tell us the substance of their plan as well, but yes, I absolutely.
And we can read that.
Yes.
You know, some of the challenges have been on the strategic plans are some states have did a beautiful job, started out, I think we discussed this a little bit last time, but the implementation fell apart. So they had a great document and then didn't have the juice, so to speak, to make it all happen. And certainly, you know, that may be a two-part conversation to have. Okay, after we're down the road with a strategic plan, how can we implement what we just created? Braden, you know, because I was thinking that we could, there's not that many strategic plans that are out there, theoretically. And if you look through them and determine who the plans that we admire and see who the authors are, that'll give us a pretty good, you know, when we're sending things out to send things to them. John, how long does this process take? I mean, if we start, you know, before the next meeting, have an RFP out, can we do that?
Well, that would be pretty tight. I think the biggest thing, as I said earlier, is that we have to identify what we want for Connecticut and outline that, and then secondly, get the evaluation criteria. So once we develop all of that, we put it in the format, then we typically solicit this for at least 1 month once that's developed. And then when we get the responses, as I mentioned earlier, we would then qualify to make sure that the responses met the basic needs. And then once we get those vendors, then we send it on to the evaluation committee, depending on how long. That could take anywhere from a week to several weeks. So really you're looking at a 10-week process, I would say, minimally at this point. Once we publish. So
Lois?
I wanted to suggest that maybe the best plan isn't the answer. Maybe there's some characteristics about our state and the issues we're going to face. So it would be really helpful, even if maybe it didn't turn out to be the best plan, but a state that's dealing with similar issues to where we are, so we can really gain some experience that would be relevant. And secondly, on the idea of the RFP and a consultant, what I haven't heard, what I'm not really clear on is what the consultant's supposed to do and what resources are available for a consultant. For an RFP, you need to know, you know, are we going to be doing the work, or is the consultant going to be doing the work? And is all the demographics and all the other statistics and stuff part of what they need to do, or is it not part of what they need to do? So I think some real clarification on what role they're supposed to play and what they need to do would help the process, you know, the back and forth, because the first question they're going to ask is exactly what do you want me to do, and we're going to need answers for that.
I think some of those answers are embodied in some of the documents that have been circulated. So I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're looking at refining maybe some of the questions that you posed in some correspondence that was sent a few weeks ago. So I think we're getting there. I think in terms of the work of the consultant would do the heavy lifting at the guidance of this committee. This committee wouldn't be doing the work per se. So, and to address an earlier issue about what do we do first, kind of, I would suggest that we really need to keep on task here. I think we're going to have to go down parallel paths. Yes, we can bring people in to inform the committee, but we do need to get to the business of getting that consultant hired. And it's not one can't be exclusive of the other. So, I want to be conscious of our time. We've got 10 minutes left. We'll take some quick questions. I have one other item of business beyond this, and that's going to be who's missing from the table. So we've got 5 minutes to wrap up other questions, and I think you had a question about this.
With regard to inviting someone from another state, I did read the reports, Colorado, Indiana, Texas, and so on. I must confess I was not terribly impressed with any of them. Maybe this is not the entire report. Maybe details are missing that we haven't seen. But just a suggestion, if we are going to invite someone from another state, can we make sure that whatever plan was proposed in that state has been implemented or it's in the process of being implemented?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good point. Linda, yes, Dr. Lindy.
A couple of things. One is that it might be that you could sweeten the breakfast if Haley Glover had time, a little bit of time, to stay on after the breakfast to maybe have a conversation about this. But I think as important and more urgent than really digesting the plans right now is maybe putting a shout out to those states, unless they're online, to get their RFPs so that we know where they started and what materials they were furnished with. And more importantly, to know what their timelines were, because I think that that's what you need for tweaking the legislation's technical deficiencies at this point in changing dates.
All good points. Thank you. Jason?
Yes. John, just to, think in terms of thinking about what we could actually do between now and our next meeting in terms of progress. I was thinking of something that Judy had suggested maybe 45 minutes ago in terms of maybe we all take some of the other state plans and a number of us read them and then report them back so that that not everybody has to read every single plan, but everybody here between all of us have read some plans. I think that's something that we can do off outside of this room on our own time. I think the other thing I would add to that, I know we talked about it earlier, and I don't think it should be forgotten, are the strategic plans of the colleges within the state of Connecticut. I know that having served on, when I worked at Charter Oak, on the steering committee for their strategic plan, it was an intense process that did a lot of the things we're talking about. It incorporated demographics. It incorporated labor trends. So maybe in addition to looking at other state plans, we somehow ascertain a copy of the latest strategic plan for all the institutions within the state of Connecticut and then split them up among members of the group and we can all take a look at those. They may even familiarize ourselves with some of the colleges and some of the programs of the colleges that we may not all necessarily be familiar with. We could probably all name every college, but we don't necessarily know a lot about every single one.
Good. Thank you. Let's make this required reading. You've got this online. It's a short read. It's quick. And I recommend everybody read it. And it's worth it. And yes, please, and a statute. I'm just assuming everyone had read that, but I wasn't assuming that everyone had read this piece, and it's very good. Last question from John.
Not so much a question, but a procedural point, and that is I'm not presuming that there would be any costs involved with any of the departments at the state level here to come in and talk to us. But what if we bring in somebody from another state or whatever, I would presume that we would pay their expenses or something along those lines. And I'm wondering if there's some sort of a authorization from the from this committee that that we would like to initiate the process at least of making funds available to compensate speakers that come in from outside. Or maybe we don't have to do that, but I would hate to not be able to bring somebody in because we hadn't done that.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. We did discuss it in a previous conversation. I'm not sure we have a we have an answer for it, but we'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to do it.
Just a request, yeah. A very brief request. The information we got about our fellow commissioners here had the home address and so on. Can we get a better list showing institutional association and so on? I would greatly appreciate that.
I thought there was such a list, no?
Yeah, I think the first meeting has your institutions. It has how you were appointed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is such a list. You can take a look at this one. I don't know if there's a copy. Gene, is there a copy over?
I took the information from the appointment letter, so that was what I had to go by to identify everybody, and I contacted the people who appointed you asking for email addresses if it wasn't in the appointment letter.
If you need it re-emailed, fine, but I do remember. I've got it in my packet here. I think it's pretty clear.
There is some that aren't specific. Well, it says Fairfield, your Fairfield University, so it's in your email address. But I think most everyone has on this list what institution they're associated with.
There are probably a couple here that you might be unsure about their affiliation. I understand, yes. If we can do a better job of that, we will, but I'm assuming that we've done as good. Yeah, that's what I was assuming. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. And for the last few minutes, while we have a very good committee, I would ask the question, are we missing anyone from this committee? This is important work. Is anyone left out here? Anyone, not any sector, so to speak, not represented. Now, while Judy and I would suggest that we're kind of surrogates for the business community. I mean, I think we can fairly well represent the business community. It's not quite the same as having a senior manager from a large corporation sitting on the committee. I hope you don't find exceptions in that, Judy, but that's for example. So I would ask, yes, Judy.
For the last number of years, the organization that I used to work for has been looking at the lack of success among Latino students, and I didn't know if there was anybody who might represent that sector because their education is so stalled and so slow and leaks in a variety of places that I didn't know whether that might happen. Actually, that's a very important point in terms of who's missing from the table, because the legislation is very specific, and it says that the commission members shall reflect the state's geographic, racial, and ethnic diversity. The problem that occurs in an appointment process like this, we all, all the leaders nominate, or put up, a person, recommend a person without knowing who all the others are appointing. So now we're all at the table and we can look around and say, okay, who should be here? And clearly the Latino community, which is a growing population, those kids are falling behind. They're the ones that closing the achievement gap and the income gap are critically important. In fact, today is was Pay Equity Day here at the Capitol, and women Latino make 54% of what white men make in the state of Connecticut. I mean, so that's an issue right there.
Any other ideas about who's missing?
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder if it's appropriate to have someone from the community college community,
there should be
a president or someone that has a handle on what's going on in community colleges. I think that will be a central issue.
There is no one who, the way this is structured, that you can be from an institution, but you're not a present employee of that institution. We try to really get away from having specific stakeholders. I think Senator Bai talked about how people come to boards like this and they're there just to advocate for their institution. And we really, in setting this up, were pretty clear that it was going to be former administrators or faculty members from the University of Connecticut, a former administrator from a regional community college. So all of those institutions should be represented here at the table. And you're an example of a private, college.
I will say the Board of Regents for Higher Education is the governing body for the community colleges, has a good handle on the activities that are going on. So I think that they are reasonably well represented.
Thank you.